Okay, this morning we're going to be doing Daniel. We have one lesson on Daniel. We could probably have several lessons. A lot in Daniel that relates to premillennialism. Of course, Daniel is a very tough book, like Revelation, because of all the prophetic literature or scriptures in there. So it'll be a tough lesson for us this morning as we get into Daniel. Before that, as we normally do, we do our review. So we've got a couple of questions here this morning. We have been studying for the last two class periods Matthew chapter 24. And so I got a couple of questions related to that. So first question we have here is, how do you know Matthew 24 is talking mainly about the destruction of Jerusalem? Use scripture to prove your answer. Of course, what premillennialists will say about Matthew chapter 24, they say that's the period talking about the last days. The rapture and all these wars are going to be happening way in the future. And that's what the first part of Matthew 24 is all about. So we have to address, we have to answer that. So what is Matthew 24 talking about, and how do you use scripture to prove your answer? Doug?
Well, Matthew 24:34 says this generation.
Right. All the things that Jesus talks about is going to happen in this generation. And what things is Jesus talking about? What are all these things?
Signs of the coming of the Lord,
and specifically, signs of the coming of the Lord refers to Judgment Day, and on judgment on who?
Jerusalem.
So, first of all, you remember, in answering this question, remember the first part of Matthew 24. Jesus had just come back from the temple, and Jesus tells his disciples, not one stone is going to be left undone, meaning the temple is going to be destroyed. And then the disciples ask Jesus these two questions. When is it going to happen, and what will be the sign of your coming? Judgment on the temple of Jerusalem. And so they begin with that question. And then, of course, Jesus replies that all that will be torn down. And so talking about destruction of Jerusalem. Within chapter 24, there is this phrase, abomination of desolation, in Matthew 24. What is that talking about? Abomination of desolation. Go ahead, John. Right. When we did the paralleling, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the sign of this destruction going to happen is when Jerusalem is surrounded by armies. So this abomination desolation is talking about the destruction of the temple and the end of the Jewish dispensation. And the key thing is, remember, is what was spoken about, this abomination desolation is a phrase from the Old Testament, from Daniel. Chapter 11, verse 31, talking about the destruction of Jerusalem, as Matthew brings the that into the setting of Matthew 24. Okay, let's move on. We got quite a bit of material to cover this morning, so we'll go ahead and get into the material for this morning. So what we are trying to achieve this morning is understand how premillennialists will use Daniel to support their doctrine, and to realize that what we find in Daniel, the prophecies, pertain to historical events that have already taken place, not something way in the future. And you had a number of questions here, but before I begin, let's... one thing when we look at the book of Daniel, we know there are outside in the world, there are people, critics of the Bible, who say the Bible is not the Word of God. It's just a piece of literature, various different views about it, but some that do not believe that it is the Word of God. And one of the books of the Bible they attack the most is the book of Daniel. And what they will try to do in the book of Daniel is try to put a date to much more recent or much more later than when Daniel was actually written, because of so many historical events that are mentioned that you can tie down to things that have happened in past history. When Daniel was taken captivity, remember he was taken in the first captivity, and as you read the book of Daniel, he talks about some of the dreams that King Nebuchadnezzar had. And it gives some time frames. So at around 605 BC, we know that was when the first captivity, and when Daniel was taken from Jerusalem or Judea into Babylon. And then we know later on in the book of Daniel, he talks about some of the Persian rulers, Cyrus and Darius, and actually put some dates during their reigns. So around Darius, in the year that he mentions, around 536. So the book of Daniel was kind of written somewhere, possibly in parts, from 605 to 536. That's when Daniel was written. But as you get into the book of Daniel and look at it, he's going to talk about very specifically some events that will happen toward the end of the... Of course, Cyrus was Medo Persian Empire. He's going to talk about events at the end of Medo Persian. He's going to talk about things going to happen during the Greece Empire, Alexander the Great, and many other details about the Grecian Empire. Then he's going to talk about the Roman Empire and some of the rulers all the way up to the destruction of Jerusalem. So if Daniel was written around 605 to 536, he's going to write about events that are going to happen 500 years in the future, very specifically that you can tie down to actual historical events. It's a very remarkable book. And if you're a person that loves history, this is a good book to go in, and we're going to do some of that in our exercise this morning, tying down some of the prophecies that Daniel wrote to actual historical events. And we're going to see, when we do that, and hopefully you try to do the lesson, these are all events that already have happened. Nothing's going to happen in the future. So just a comment there on Daniel. So let's see what premillennialists will use. So the first thing that they will do is in the book of Daniel, is they're going to be talking about some battles, some big battles. And this is battles that are going to occur, you remember, in one of the elements of premillennialism, the Battle of Armageddon. Remember, you heard that. Well, Daniel, according to premillennialists, are going to talk about these battles. They're going to be talking about different empires that are going to be fighting against each other in this Battle of Armageddon. Of course, it's happening during these 7 years of tribulation. So let's look at what they say some of these kingdoms and kings are that are mentioned in the book of Daniel. So the first one we have here, they say they're the kingdom of the north. So if you open your Bibles to Daniel chapter 11, and if you read some of these verses here, you'll start seeing that there are some of these kings. And let's just look in verse Daniel 11:6. It says, after some years they will form an alliance, and the daughters of the king of the south will come to the king of the north to carry out a peaceful arrangement. So here you have two kings, the king of the north and king of the south. Well, premillennialists will say the king of the north is Russia. And again, it's pretty obvious, well, how do you get that to Russia? Well, that's who they believe that king of the north is. King of the north is Russia. This king of the south is, they believe it is Egypt, that's gathered together with all the other Muslim nations against Israel. So that's this battle that they think that's going to happen, the Battle of Armageddon. You got Russia. And you got all these Arab nations, which are the kings of the south there in Daniel 11. Now look at verse 18. And so you got kings of the north, kings of the south, but there are other kingdoms that are also going to be involved. In verse 18, it says, and he will turn his face to the coastlands and capture many. So they say these coastlands, who is that? That's the European powers. And again, kind of obvious. Well, how do they get there? Well, this is who they believe Daniel is writing about. And they go down to verse 44. You have another empire. In verse 44, it says, and the rumors from the east and from the north will disturb him, and he will go forth with great wrath to destroy and annihilate many. So here you have these rumors from the east. Well, who is that? Well, according to premillennialists, that's China. And all other Asian countries involved with China kind of leading that. So here you have these battles of the king of the north, the coastlands, and the east. And when is this all going to happen? Look at verse 40. This battle of Armageddon, verse 40. He says, in verse 40 he says, and at the end time, that's the end of the 7 years of tribulation, which would be this battle of Armageddon before Christ comes, the king of the south will collide with him. And the king of the north will storm against him with chariots, with horsemen, with many ships, and he will enter countries, overflow them, and pass through. And so they say, well, that's this battle, and it's going to happen. And then right after that, there's the end times. And what happens at the end of times? Now we have Christ coming back to the earth, setting up his earthly kingdom and reigning for 1,000 years. So this is how premillennialists will use the book of Daniel in terms of this battle of Armageddon and who these different kingdoms are. So we need to answer that. And of course, we can answer many ways. You know, well, how do you know it's Russia? And, you know, we can get to a lot of that, but we can look at it other things. And that's where we get into our questions. So the first question here is, we know anytime we read our Bible, we got to look at who is written to and the setting. And in Daniel 11, 1 through 4, talks about a time frame of the prophecy. So what did you put it for question number one? According to the first four verses of chapter 11, what is the time frame of these prophecies? Okay. Medo Persian, Greece, and Rome. Let's just look at that. First of all, Daniel's writing, and here's one of the time indicators in Daniel. He's writing, he's seen these visions, and here's the time frame. He says, in the first year of Darius the Mede. So Daniel's going to have a vision. And this happens during Darius the Mede. And he says, I will tell you the truth. Behold, three more kings are going to rise in Persia. So Darius the Mede is the king, but he says there's going to be three more kingdoms past him. Then a fourth will gain far more riches than all of them. And as soon as he becomes strong through his riches, he will arouse the whole empire against the realm of Greece. So we know Greece was the other world empire after Medo-Persian. And it says the mighty king will arise and he will rule with a great authority and do as he pleases. And as soon as he has risen, his kingdom will be broken up. So here we're talking about the Grecian kingdom being broken up and parceled out toward the four points of the compass, though not to his own descendants, nor according to authority, which he had welded his sovereignty, will be uprooted and given to others. So the time frame is, first of all, he talks about in Darius the Mede, but it's going to be events that are going to be following his reign all the way through Greece and up to Rome. And he's going to talk about Greece also being overthrown. So that's the time frame that he's talking about here. And so again, we say, okay, if premillennials want to make this way in the future, you know, the 7 years of tribulation, he's telling about when this is going to happen. This is happening. He actually got some empires already named Greece. Okay, so now what about all these kings? We did read about these kings of the north, kings of the south, and all this. Now, what we're about to engage in is a very detailed historical study. And the way I have a question number two here is these prophecies we find in chapter 11, you can see some other similarities to other things talked about in other chapters. And so the exercise I had you go through here is to parallel three chapters in Daniel. Daniel chapter 7, 8, and 11. And these three chapters are parallel, and they help clarify one each other. And I ask you in the table is wherever you have a verse listed, list what the is said in that verse about kings, kingdoms, events that are happening. And if there's no verse listed, that means there's nothing comparable in either Daniel or Daniel 8 or Daniel 11. And then we have what the actual historical event is. So when you fill out this table, you might have had some difficulty if you haven't done a study of Daniel and looking at how this is tied to history. You might have found this very difficult. This filling out this table is like a jigsaw puzzle. You're not always able to answer the first question right out. But as you start filling out the table, you'll find out things when you go through this table that help you understand and fill out things above it. So let's just begin with the first one here. So in Daniel chapter 7, I list verse 3. There's something in Daniel 7, 3 that I wanted you to pull out of that, talking about kings, kingdoms, or something that Daniel see. What did you put for verse 3? Right. Right. So we have Daniel in chapter 7, verse 3. There are four beasts in the prophetic literature here. So now the question is, you know, what are those beasts? Now, there's nothing mentioned about these four beasts in the other Daniel 9 or Daniel 11, but now we have asked you to put what historical event is. Now, I'm just throw it out to the class. Did you find a historical event? What these four beasts are? What they represent? Anyone?
Nero.
Okay, someone says Nero. Others?
Four kingdoms after Alexander the Great.
Four kingdoms after Alexander the Great. Okay. Right. So you see, we have a lot of different answers here. So let's look at, and again, this is a difficult thing. It takes some thought and work and contemplation. Look at a couple of key verses to identify who these beasts are. Go down to verse 17 of chapter 7. 7:17. These great beasts, any prophetic literature, you always look, if the guy that's writing the prophetic literature, if he tells you what they are, that's a key. You're always looking for that. And he tells you here, what are the four beasts? Well, we don't know what they are. Well, he's going to tell you in verse 17. He says, the four beasts which are four in number are four kings who will rise from the earth. So we can say four beasts is four kings. Now, what are the kings? Is it actually certain specific kings? We talked about this before. We go down to verse 23 as he starts talking about these different beasts. And he said the fourth beast will be a fourth kingdom. So the represent in the text we find four beasts are kings, but the kings represent kingdoms. So these four beasts are four kingdoms. And again, as you go through going through this entire table, what are the four kingdoms? The four kingdoms are Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greek, and Rome. So that's what the four beasts are. Now we think about that. You all had a little bit different answers there, but again, Daniel was telling what they are. They're kingdoms. Well, what four kingdoms are they? Well, when you look at all these three chapters, you'll find that he's going to go through and talk about specifically each one of them. So the four beasts are four kingdoms. Okay, the next line I had, Daniel 7:4. So now we have four beasts. Now he's going to talk about some of these beasts specifically. So in verse 4, what beast is mentioned? The lion, okay? And now we ask, how we have these lions? Now, if we already know the four beasts are these four kingdoms, and he's going to go through the four, and these others are going to be tied down later on. So, again, you may not know the answer right away, but as you start filling out the table, make sure it's consistent. The lion represents the Babylon Empire. That's the first beast, is the lion. Okay, now we go on to the next beast in Daniel 7:5. What beast is mentioned in 7:5? Okay, what is the symbol? What beast is mentioned? The bear. Right. So now we have the bear. And John is right, is Medo-Persian. But we also have something from Daniel mentioned in Daniel chapter 8. I had a couple of verses here. Again, Daniel's going to have these. We got these parallel chapters talking about the same events. Now, they don't all line up. They're just different pieces of information at different times. But in Daniel 8:3, there's something mentioned in Daniel 8:3 that Daniel sees. What did he see? He saw a ram. Okay. And if you drop down in chapter 8, it's a key chapter because he also will tell you who the ram is. Look down in verse 20. He says, the ram which you saw with two horns represents the kings of Medo-Persia. So again, the bear in Daniel 7 is Medo-Persia. The ram in Daniel 8 is Medo-Persia. And of course, that would be the second beast. Now, some of these are become a little bit more difficult. This next one is difficult. So in the next line, in Daniel 8, I have verse 2. Okay, Daniel 8. Let's look at Daniel 8, verse 2. First of all, I looked at the vision, and it came about I was looking. I looked in the citadel of Susa, which was the province of Elam, and I looked in the vision, and I myself was beside Eul Cantel. And I lifted my gaze, and behold, a ram, which had two horns, was standing in front of the canal. Now the two horns were long, but one was longer than the other, and the longer one was coming up at last. And when you go through historically and look at that, and then you go to verse 4, I should have put some other verses there. And I saw the ram budding westward, northward, southward, and no other beast could stand before him, nor was there anyone to rescue from his power, but he did not please it. What you find here is that in this one, it's not obvious, but in verse 2, he's talking about the fourth king in the Medo-Persia is coming up against another world empire, Greece. Now, when you look at that historically, I didn't have these in order. Yeah. Right. Okay, and verse 7, I saw him who came beside the ram, and he was enraged at him, and he struck the ram and shattered his two horns, and the ram had no strength to withstand him. Well, I'll go back and look at that one, Steve. That one was a little bit more questionable when I looked at it going through the class. But
well, I'm sure you had a verse in mind.
Yeah, I might go back and look at that one. Again, that one was not an easy one. Well, let's go on now to the next line where we had Daniel 7 and we had verse 6. So Daniel 7, verse 6. So again, another beast is pictured. What beast is pictured here?
Leopard.
The leopard. Okay. Now, if you look at Daniel 8 and verse 5, parallel that, you have another animal that's mentioned here. And a male goat
from the west.
And then go to Daniel 11:3. There's something here that kind of parallels all these events. What did you see anything in verse 3 that is mentioned? A mighty king. So this is talking about the Grecian Empire, but specifically referring to Alexander the Great. He is the mighty, mighty king. Okay, now let's go to the next line in verse 7 of Daniel 8. Daniel 8, verse 7. What happens here? What's the thing that's... what happens in this imagery? Right. What we find here is that the ram is killed. Right? And so remember the ram was Medo-Persia. And so the actual historical event is this is where Alexander the Great actually conquered Medo-Persia, which occurred right around 330 BC. So now we're into the Grecian Empire. Now we'll go back to the next line, Daniel 8, and look at verse 8. What happens in Daniel 8, 8? The horn is broken. Okay. And then in Daniel 11, 4, what happens in Daniel 11, 4? The kingdom breaks up. And so what is this all tied to? This is where Alexander dies. And what happens after Alexander dies? The Grecian Empire, he had four powerful generals that helped him defeat the whole world at that time. And what happens after Alexander dies, and we go on to the next line, Daniel 8:8, you'll find you have these four horns. Daniel 8:8. You know, first of all, the male goat, he was mighty, and the large horn was broken. Look at Daniel 8:8. So Alexander dies. He's the large horn. He was broken. And in his place there came up four conspicuous horns toward the four winds of the earth. So you have these four horns. And this is where the kingdom divides into four, the Grecian Empire. And they're all led by these powerful generals that helped Alexander conquer the world. And historically, that's exactly what happened. These four generals divide up the Grecian Empire right around 323 B.C. So some of these, like, I need to go back and check the one that Steve brought up. But at least in some of these, we start to see how this, all talking about historical events specifically. And now there's quite a bit more we could go through. I didn't provide in chapter 11. We read several verses what premillennials used, the kings of the north, kings of the south. Who are those? Who are these coastlands? Well, for sake of time, and I could go through and we could go through that exercise. But that's all going to be talking about things that are going to be happening within the Grecian Empire. And that you can tie them to actual historical events. And if you are interested, I can provide you specifically the events that's in Daniel 11 and what the historical event is. We want to kind of skip that, because we want to just know that there's a lot more history here. Things that can be tied specifically to Grecian rulers and during these four kings. They divided, they had rulers underneath them, and there were a lot of wars and strife that were going on between them. But so we're going to go ahead and skip that a lot in chapter 11. We want to go and kind of now go to back to Daniel 7:7. So we kind of we start with Medo-Persia. We're now toward Greece. Greece is broken up. And now we come now to the last beast. So in Daniel 7:7, what beast is mentioned in Daniel 7:7? Okay, it was called a fourth beast, right? And note at the last part of verse 7, it was different from all the other beasts that were before it. It had 10 horns. So you could put a beast with 10 horns. I put he was an odd beast. So here's the fourth beast. Again, we know that these beasts are kingdoms. And who is this odd beast? Odd beast is talking about Rome, which started right around 66 B.C., but now we're now in the Roman Empire, and now there's a lot of other things talked about Rome. Go to Daniel 7, verse 23. So, and he said, the fourth beast will be a fourth kingdom on the earth, and it will be different from all the other kingdoms, and it will, what? It will devour the whole earth. So if you look at verse 23, this fourth beast is going to devour the whole earth. And what is that talking about? Talking about how the Roman Empire had complete dominance. It conquered the Grecian Empire and it dominated the whole earth. It was the world empire at that time. So now that you have the Roman Empire. Now in the next line, we have verses 7 and verse 24. So now we're here during the Roman Empire and something happened. What did verse 7 and verse 24, what did you find here? What happened? You had 10 kings. Again, verse 24. For out of these 10 horns, out of this kingdom, there were 10 kings. So historically, in this one, you have 10 horns, which represent kings. This is during the Roman Empire. Well, we always think of Roman Empire with one Caesar, one empire. But actually, in the formation of the Roman Empire, it actually was led at first by 10 tribunes, which were, and you can tie that historically, they were 10 horns representing 10 rulers, 10 tribunes. Okay, and then after you had the 10 horns, in Daniel 7:8, what do you find in Daniel 7:8? What happened to these 7 horns? Says that the first and three of the first horns were pulled out by the roots before, and behold, this horn possessed eyes like a man. So you have here these three horns, and you had 10 tribunes, but then they consolidated into three rulers, the three horns. And then in verse 8 also, there's several things in verse 8. Now you have this little horn. Note that in verse 8. You have this little horn. And this horn possessed eyes like the eyes of man and a mouth uttered like great beasts. Now, you remember when we talked about this little horn, when we talked about the Antichrist, premillennialists will go and say, well, this little one here is the Antichrist. But historically, after you had the tribune, you had the first empire. This is kind of the first Caesar. And that occurred right around 27 B.C. So for sake of time, let me go through the rest of it, the table. And again, this was not easy, and I'll go back and check the ones that you mentioned. You have verse 11 of Daniel 7. And the event there was pompous words. Laws were changed. And what happened historically? Well, Caesar then started imposing worship. He was considered as a god. People had to worship him as God. Then in verse 13 and 14, then it talks about, now it's kind of getting toward talking about Christ. Talks about there's going to be another kingdom. It's going to have dominion. Talking about the Son of Man. Now it's talking about the spiritual kingdom. In verse 13 and 14. In verse 21, there's going to be a war against the saints. Talking about oppression that occurred during the Roman Empire. Jews and Christians. And last one I had here in verse 25. Says saints were given times, times, and times and a half. Likely talking about civil persecution. So, again, my point here is you may not agree and you may not necessarily see everything I mentioned here, but look at it. And the point here is this is not talking about something way in the future. These are actual historical events occurring during these four empires. Alex, you had a question, comment?
Logothes, the first, Ganes, and Judas. He moved all these people out of power. So we can see that Daniel's prophecies are not only accurate, I mean, they are pinpoint accurate, I was about to say.
Okay. All right, so now we talked about the kings of premillennials. Now we'll get into these 70 weeks. So go with me to Daniel chapter 9. There's these 70 weeks, so let's talk about the 70 weeks. We've talked about this before, but we'll talk about it a little bit more. So in Daniel 9, there's these 70 weeks that are mentioned down in verse 24 of Daniel 9. So this is how premillennialists look at the 70 weeks. So premillennialists postulate that God operates by a stopwatch system. According to them, God only counts time during those periods where he is occupied with the affairs of the Jewish nation. As they see, verse 24, 70 weeks, or 490 years were allotted to bring the Jews to everlasting righteousness through the Messiah. Since that obviously haven't been accomplished, they postulate a lapse between the rejection of Jesus in the 69th week and God's renewed pressure on them via the tribulation of the 70 week, nearing 2,000 years so far. So we mentioned this, and I think I've mentioned this before, but want to kind of mention this again. So you remember premillennialists, they will use these 70 weeks as actual literal time. And they believe a week actually represents a year. So it's 70 times 7, 490 years. And so they say that, and you look at Daniel 9:24, let's look at that, or not 9:26. We read 24 where we have the 70 weeks. But then note verse 26. He said, then after 62 weeks, the Messiah will be cut off and have nothing. Now, at this time, we got the 70 weeks. But here you have 62 weeks. And you go back to verse 5, you have 7 weeks. So you've got 7 plus 62 weeks. So you're in the 69th week. So they say in the 69th week, the clock has been running. But at that point, premillennialists will stop the clock. And between the first part of the verse and the last part of the verse, there they have the parenthesis, the gap. This is where we are, the church age. And then once the rapture comes, the clock will start again. And this last part of Daniel 9:26, that is the 70th week, which is the 7 years. Remember, they think a week represents years. So the 70th week, which will be 7 years, that's the 7 years of tribulation. So in between that, that's where premillennialists will put 2,000 plus years. So let's consider the 70 weeks. Are actually literal weeks? What do the weeks represent? So we have some questions here. So in Daniel 9, we ask the question here, who is this vision for? If you look at Daniel 9, who is this vision for? Right. This vision, like Matt pointed out, it is for their people and for their city. That's this vision is for. So, again, how does that pertain to premillennialists? You know, it's for the people at the time that Daniel is writing. So let's look at the 70 weeks here. I asked you this question. There's a footnote in verse in the New American Standard and the New King James on the word weeks. What is that? What is the footnote? And I asked the second question, is the 70 weeks a literal time period? So what does the footnote say? Okay. Right. They're units of seven. Or literally, seven times 70. Or you could say 490. And now the question is, are these literal weeks? So we know weeks, seven times 70, 490. Is it a literal period of time? Right. So the answer is no. Seven in the Bible represents a number of completeness. And when you have seven times 70, it's the ultimate completion. It's not a little period of time. Now, you could, if premillennialists use that the weeks represent years, clearly it can't be an actual week, you know. So they say the weeks represent years. So if you have 70 times, if those 70 times 7, 490, actually 490 years, what does that correspond to historically? Well, it doesn't. You can never really tie down the 490 years to actual something specifically. But this vision was made in verse 24. It says, and as Matt pointed out, the 70 weeks have been decreed for your people and your holy city. We'll come back to that. But it's for your people and for your holy city. So if you take 490 years and try to figure out when does that start to pertain to, in verse 25, almost indicates the starting. Some will use that as the starting time. The 490 years, where do you start it? When verse 25. So you are to know and discern that from the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. So this is a decree that was issued to rebuild and restore Jerusalem. Well, that decree was issued by Cyrus, and that happened in the year of 539. So if you take 539 and you take the 490 years minus 1 week, you come up with a time of 56 BC. Well, that doesn't tie anything to historically. The point here is if in any time period, in looking at different scenarios, it really doesn't tie to anything historically in their history. So that suggests that this term means completeness, the ultimate completeness. And so what God is saying here or through the prophet Daniel is he has a plan. He's going to bring about Christ and destruction of Jerusalem. It's going to be a complete thing. So it's not a period of time, but it's a concept of ultimate completion of God's plan. It's going to happen at a specific time and according to God's choosing, but cannot be tied down to anything literally. Okay, now verse 4. Actually, I think I had in verse 24, there was a typo in the lesson. So in Daniel 9:24, there are six things that are mentioned that are going to happen. It says 70 weeks have been decreed for your people. And what's going to happen after these 70 weeks? There's six things that are mentioned. What things did you see there in verse 24? Finish transgression. Make an end to sin. Right? Make a reconciliation for iniquity. Bring everlasting righteousness. seal up the vision and prophecy, anoint the most holy place. So these are all things going to happen during the 70 weeks. Now, all these things, of course, are talking about Christ. And I had it in your next question here, is a lot of these terms are used in the New Testament, talking about Christ, specific things about Christ and the plan of salvation. And if you looked at that, the first one is in Mark 12. Mark 12, 1 through 9. You find in that particular verse, what happened? Well, they crucified the Messiah. And finished the transgression. Crucify the Messiah. Hebrews 10, 17. Well, Christ will remember their sin no more by His sacrifice. And what we find in Daniel was make an end of sin. In Romans 5, 10, Christ has reconciled us by His sacrifice. In Daniel 24, we found this reconciliation. So all these things we find in Daniel, we find similar terms being used in the New Testament. And if you go through the other verses, you'll find the same thing. Eternal salvation, prophecies about Christ being fulfilled, manifestation that Jesus was the promised Messiah. So, again, as you look at this vision, you see that a lot of these things are tied down historically, and it's bringing us all the way up to the point of Christ and judgment on the Jewish dispensation upon the Jewish people, and we have Christ coming on the scene, and all these things are going to happen. So you see here, you can tie all these things to the time period that we're talking about, and it kind of ends with Christ and the end of the Jewish empire. And then in the last question I have here is, what will happen after 69 weeks? You look at verse 25 and 26. Verse 26, and after the 62th week, which will be 62 plus a 7, a 69, what will happen then? Right. Now, first of all, you have the Messiah will be cut off. Right? His death. And not only that, in verse 26 and 27, you'll find that the city will be destroyed, the sanctuary will be destroyed. This is the abomination of desolation that Daniel is writing about that we tied back to Matthew 24. So hopefully we've seen, as we studied the book of Daniel, and again, there's quite a bit of information here, and hopefully we can see that how can premillennialists take this and apply it to something way in the future when all these things can be tied down to something historically, and talking about these empires during that we talked about, Medo-Persia, Greece, the Rome, and all these things going to happen as a result of what Christ is going to do for us with His death. And so Daniel is a very important book for us, talking about Christ. Of course, more important book for the Jews, because they saw that was going to happen to the temple and how Christ was going to be, we can come on the scene, the Messiah was going to die. This was all prophesied by the prophet Daniel. Okay, I think our time is up a little bit over. I kind of rushed through that. I apologize for that table. Again, it's not an easy thing, but hopefully it was helpful to you to see that there are actual historical events that you can tie the book of Daniel to, and they're quite elaborate. And there's a lot we didn't cover in chapter 11 that can be tied down to events. And if you're interested in receiving that, let me know and I'll provide it. Well, thank you for your good work. And again, Daniel was a tough one, but hopefully we got some very important things from the book of Daniel. Any last comments, questions? Okay, class dismissed.